Hello and a very warm welcome to another episode of the Get Football Tactics podcast. I'm your host, Neil Shelat, and as always, I'm delighted to say I have been joined by Alex Barker. How are you, Alex?
I'm doing good, Neil. Pleasure to be here.
Wow, a pleasure as well. And we're also joined by Varun Vasudevan. How are you, Varun?
Likewise, really happy to be here with you guys and record another fun episode on football tactics. So yeah, let's get into it.
Yes, let's get into it indeed. And the topic this time, as you might have noticed in the title, is Atletico Madrid, who are having a very interesting season this time around. They are challenging for the top four in La Liga, not really the title, but they are through to the Champions League quarterfinals. And if you've seen the draw, I mean, they have certainly the easier of the two paths to the final. So who knows, they might go all the way this time. The main reason though we're talking about them is because even like in the Champions League, or certainly I noticed this like in the commentary of their game against Inter, people were still treating them as like the team of 5 years ago that just, you know, defend. But like if you watch the game, that's clearly not the team they are. They've changed a lot in the last few years. And especially this season, they're playing a very different way to how they used to play. So usually I'm the person who tells you about a club and a coach's history. But before the episode, we were just talking that Diego Simeone took over at Atletico Madrid in 2011. And if my maths is right, I was in second grade then. So, Varun, why don't you tell me what was going on back in the day?
That's a really nice way just to say that, Varun, you're the oldest guy here. You old hag, tell us what the young kids don't know. I mean, it's pretty much all that you guys have read in the history books. Simeone took over and Atletico Madrid were not the force they were, right? I mean, Barcelona and Real Madrid have always been the top two. And I think the early success in those few years was basically defense first. I mean, Simeone came and made them the toughest side to break down. They had this very almost classic 4-4-2, like a throwback kind of formation, especially defensively. And they had so many really good defenders. Godin was so good as a center back, one of the most underrated center backs in his time. And really strong midfielders as well. And I think that gave them a lot of success. For a while, they were able to keep pace with the top three, the top four, and Atletico Madrid kept coming in the top four and five. And I think that's still what a lot of people associate with Diego Simeone. I think his personality, his character, his team's characters also, as I said, these hardcore defenders, defensive midfielders, and them coming up in Champions League games and frustrating the big teams, that is kind of, it's almost like a branding marketing thing. They've just been labeled as, you know, a hardcore Simeone side, a hardcore 4-4-2, hardcore defensive side. And it's really funny that Atletico Madrid have been planting the seeds for the change to a more progressive style for almost 4 years now. I mean, 2020 was when I would say this whole thing started, where Simeone tried to start going beyond a defense-first mentality. I think the first things were a lot of his older players, the old guard retiring, a lot of those players going away and new players coming in. That gave him new options. And it's been there. I mean, they've always tried to buy attacking players, buy flair players, and then somehow it doesn't work. So it's not like Simeone's intention wasn't there. But I think it started happening in 2020 when, for the first time, we started seeing the 5-3-2. So the formation change from a 4-4-2 to a 5-3-2 started giving a different dynamic. But I would still say that 2021 season, which in which they won the league, it was still largely based on principles from before. You could see the formation changes, but then there was still a mid-block team. There was still a bit of a low-pressing team. And a lot of the principles of play that won them the title were still based on what they've been doing for the previous few years. What I would say is it's 21-22 where the major changes started, where they were trying to press high, where they were trying to keep the ball a bit more. And you could see the effects of that too. I think halfway through the season, they were 6th or 7th. They were like 18, 19 points behind Real Madrid. And even by season end, they came back to their usual third behind Madrid and Barcelona, but they conceded 43 goals, which is crazy for a Simeone side. I mean, you do not hear that about a Simeone side. So that was, I think, the first signs of change. I think halfway through the season, this was the time when most reports came on Simeone probably leaving Atletico or not renewing his contract, or, you know, other clubs like United or Chelsea wanting Simeone, and there were a lot of rumors, but he just stuck to it, and he kept trying the 5-3-2 with a bit more expansiveness. And 21-22, it kind of ended with them at third, but with a lot of goals conceded. And I think this is where the Joao Felix thing didn't really work out. I think he really wanted to build the team around Felix, but there were so many issues there. I mean, I think we'll all agree 120 million was a tad bit overpriced. Let's not make this into a Felix episode, but that didn't really work out in a great way. Then there were a lot of other things. He was fourth choice at one point, dropped. He was visiting a psychologist. And I think mid-season, they got the loan to Chelsea done in the next year. And they got Griezmann back. But again, it wasn't really smooth. At one point, Simeone was using Griezmann only post 60 minutes in games, because there was a clause that if they used him too much, they had to pay Barcelona something. So it was a bit of a mess. And I think it all got sorted out when the transfer finally completed and Griezmann could start playing consistently. And even Griezmann's first 6 months to almost 1 year was pretty poor. I think he scored only 3 goals in his first one calendar year in Atletico Madrid. And he even said in a press conference that, "I'm still trying to make people love me back, you know, because a lot of people still dislike me." And that's understandable. The way he left, the way he went to Barcelona with that documentary and all that. So it took a while for Griezmann as well. And I think 22-23 and not just the end, even midway, Atletico Madrid started doing really well. Griezmann started doing really well. I think he ended last season with double-digit goals and assists. He got the right role. Simeone's attacking started having its output. And I think second half of last season, they were amongst the most informed teams in Europe. And that's how they've continued into this season as well. I still wouldn't say like they're perfect. And I think there's one more level of evolution they need to take. But I think we can safely say that they have, you know, really grown out of that 4-4-2 defensive mid-block team shadow. And now they're a very exciting, dynamic 5-3-2 kind of team, with Griezmann being the center of that team. So it's been a long journey, and it's not something you can just say happened in 1 year. It's taken like 3, 4, 5 years, but it's like been a very exciting transformation. This is very rare to see in football. I mean, Simeone being here for 10 plus years and undergoing multiple teams and struggling a bit, but finally finding his way, is just a really nice modern story.
Thank you very much, sir, for that history lesson. So I guess with that, we can dive straight into Atleti's current tactics. And I know Alex is going to do the stats a little bit later, but I think just one thing which illustrates the final point Varun made was is that if you look at like the team sequence, team possession styles that the analysts have on their website, then in La Liga, there's basically five teams which are in the slow and intricate corner. Obviously, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Girona, Las Palmas, who we discussed recently, and Atletico Madrid. So now they're much closer to that side than even the median teams, like even Real Sociedad, Sevilla, Real Betis. So I think that's one thing which clearly illustrates that the shift in style that Varun mentioned. But yeah, obviously then let's start by talking about how they play in possession, because it's no longer 4-4-2 hoofball. It's a very, I would say there's a good balance between sort of structure and fluidity in this Atleti side. So as far as shapes are concerned, obviously from the 5-3-2, the most straightforward attacking shape you can create is a 3-1-6 of sorts. Generally for Atletico, we can call it a 3-1-5-1. Because Griezmann drops in as a free central number 10. We'll talk about that as well later. But interestingly, they also shift quite often to a typical 2-3-2-3 structure, which, you know, you associate with teams that play 4-3-3. But what generally happens is the left wing back, who's either Samuel Díaz-Lino or Rodrigo Riquelme, both previously wingers, will push up all the way, like fully high and wide, as a typical left winger would. The left center back will pull out into a sort of a left back type of region. You've got your other two center backs in the last line, and then you've got the right wing back dropping in, and that's someone like Nahuel Molina, or sometimes even Marcos Llorente. Cesar Azpilicueta can play there if you need. So they have this sort of an asymmetry in their back five, which then leads to this 2-3-2-3 type structure, which obviously, as we know, is a favored structure of many possession-based teams. And obviously then there's various other variations that they do. Like in big games, for example, they'll switch to like a 3-2-5 to have more central solidity and more numbers in there to sort of control games better. But those are the basic structures you'll see. And it's all very, very possession-based, short passing, on the ground. They don't even have like target strikers up front anymore. So, I mean, you can't really kick long balls anyway if you wanted to. So they'll play out from the back. They'll have fluidity in midfield to sort of rotate and play through presses, connect the back line to the attack. And then at the end of it all, they create, you know, proper high quality chances with a good number of players attacking the box between your wing backs, your striker, and then your number eights, and of course Griezmann. So it's a totally different side. We were just talking before the episode that Atletico right now are closer to the typical image you'd have of Barcelona than the typical image you have of Atleti, which would be true like just 5-6 years ago. So it's been quite a big evolution, but I mean, clearly it is a very interesting and eye-catching style of play as well. So I think the most interesting aspect of it is how they, the dynamism they have in midfield. So Varun, why don't you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, you set it up well. Just to add to your points, I think the stable parts of their in-possession structure are definitely the MAC3. They spread out well, and I think that's the safety measure in possession they have. They rotate a lot between the back three. If at any point they're confused or they're not able to play through their way, they have that long chain of five, you know, a back three and then two wing backs on the side. And they're very free to circulate in like a U shape or a semicircle shape. And then they have Morata, who's whoever plays striker, usually Morata, who's pinning the center backs, who's like between the two center backs, or pinning the central center back if it's a back three of the opposition. These are the stable parts of the formation, and everything else is a lot more dynamic. I mean, yes, on paper, it looks like a diamond where Koke or anyone who's playing the holding midfielder slot is the deepest. And then there are two number eights, and then there's Griezmann, who's a number 10. And yes, that's how they start, and that's how they often are. But I think here is where you see a lot of movement. When the ball goes wide, a number 8 usually drifts to support to form a triangle, but Griezmann can also drift to support. And in fact, a lot of times you see four people on one side, with Griezmann also running a channel, the number 8 dropping, Griezmann taking his spot in the half space, and then the wing back playing with him and playing the free man. So they have these wide rotations that are really interesting based on how the number 8 and Griezmann move. Then lots of times the two 8s actually stay up in the half spaces, and it's Griezmann who drops centrally. I mean, this is similar to the David Silva movement for Real Sociedad that we discussed in the previous episode, that they used to do last year when David Silva was there, where the number 10 actually drops centrally and the two 8s remain in the diamond. And Griezmann often does that. He can drop very deep, you know. So many times it just works out that way. You know, the number 6 is attracting one striker. Two other attackers are on the back three. The two wide wingbacks or fullbacks of the opposition are on the wide players. And the defensive midfielders are checking the number 8s of Atletico Madrid, and the center backs are checking Morata. And Griezmann just has that gap with everyone being blocked. He drops all the way to almost like a pivot role, and he's able to receive on the half turn and then quickly turn and play someone or carry himself. So they have those kind of options. And lots of times they even form a box midfield where if play goes to one side and Koke moves, then one of the number eights drops to form like a pivot with Koke. I mean, so many teams we now know don't play a pure number six anymore, right? There's always someone pushing beside the number six to form like a pivot. And that often happens with Koke as well. I mean, he has the most number of touches for Atletico Madrid in a game. He almost gets 90 touches per 90, which is a lot. So they obviously go to him a lot, and he's constantly involved, and he's constantly putting those circulation safe passes amongst the back five. You know, they keep playing him in. But sometimes when the opponents mark him and he's dragged out, then one of the number eights come and drop beside him, and they're able to facilitate play and go forward as well. And you can see that with the person who has the second most number of touches for Atletico Madrid in Rodrigo De Paul. So often, you know, Rodrigo just drops beside from the right side in number eight position to like a pivot place when Koke is marked. So they have these lots of dynamics to, depending on how the opposition press, whether it's a front three, a front four, depending on how they press, they keep reshaping the midfield depending on where the space is, and they're able to get out. So I think these added layers, you know, these three, four, five variations of how they build out and how they find space, this is definitely different from before. As you said, their go-to moves would be a lot more simplistic, a lot more direct, a lot more vertical in a compact 4-4-2 earlier. But now they have so many of these variations, and they keep passing around between the back five until the midfield moves and they're able to figure out the spaces. And then suddenly you see two, three passes and they're in into the final third. So yeah, I mean, that's all I had to add on the in possession stuff. I think Alex has a few really good points, and I'll give it over to him.
Thank you. Yeah, I want the main thing I'm impressed by Atletico Madrid is it's something that sounds very simple, but I promise it's more complicated. Like it's the timing of their runs, and I remember telling John McKenzie about this. And I was like, think another team who timed their runs as well as Atletico Madrid. And he just said, basically any good team. And I was like, that's not the point I'm trying to make, John. The point I'm trying to make when I say their timing of runs is really great is that they tend to underload the final third for when I watch them. So the most recent game I watched was against Cadiz, which did have problems in it, which we get onto. But what you'll see, even against a team that just want to frustrate Atletico Madrid, who are happy to see territory, Atleti will be able to like kind of controllable in and around the opposition half, but when they don't pile their players forward necessarily, they only do that when they get a couple of players working towards goal who are running at goal towards the in the final third. And once the ball is like make its way to the box, you see the CM, you see the far side wing back make runs in, and another CM behind them, and it's to a way where it feels like Atletico are almost always in a transitional attack where the players are always arriving at the right times, particularly the wing backs, I think, are really good at arriving at the back post. I think it's been a clear tactic for Atletico Madrid to do this where they underload the final third, then they're able to create a bit of space, run into it, and that's when the far side wing back makes a run, gets to the back post, low ball goes across the goal mouth, and it'll go in. So that's something that I think other teams can maybe take a look from, where Atletico have been able to quite often dominate games in a more possession-based format, but not in a sense where they've had to become quite static. I think when they do, that's not always, because sometimes they will. Like when they went 2-0 in this game against Cadiz, for example, I think that was like last week, then they were just like, I don't know what to do, and pile players forward, and it didn't look as good. And one of the things that isn't particularly good, in my opinion, of their in possession setup is their rest defense. It tends to be like a 2-2, if I'm being kind, but like the spaces between the players are so large, so it means, and also between the lines as well. Between, if you think of a rest defense in your head, ladies and gentlemen, you think of the like two defenders. Easiest example: Saliba and Gabriel Arsenal. And then it's like Jorginho, Kiri or Ben White. The gap between those is like, you know, about 15 yards usually, because if the Jorginho line pushes up, so do Gabriel Saliba. With Atletico Madrid, that doesn't happen. So sometimes you'll get like 25 yards between these players. So opposition teams can hit it long towards their back line. And because the space is so large, they'll be able to win a knockdown inside their rest defense, which is a problem which I don't think Simeone has addressed.
That's an interesting point. And yeah, I think something might want to work on, but I guess also maybe to an extent a product of their rotations, because obviously, you know, while like if they're in the middle of a rotation, so to speak, like between players interchanging or something, and you concede a turnover, then well, you're bound to be exposed because your structure isn't perfectly in place. But yeah, that's an interesting point. And I think the other major aspect of Atletico's evolution, which maybe people aren't talking about so much, because I mean, certainly there's a lot of people, not exactly in international European football sort of circles, but especially in like La Liga focused circles, who have absolutely noticed this shift. But I think what doesn't get a lot of attention is how Atletico have also completely changed the way they operate out of possession, because like Oren said before, they were the typical 4-4-2 team. And I remember it was a Champions League tie against Manchester City. When was that? Was that like 2021? But they basically defended in a 5-5, like in their own half, without a single striker. They had two lines of five. It was beautiful, but unfortunately, they don't do much of that anymore. Now you get to see Atletico pressing a lot more than you'd think. I mean, they'll set up against goal kicks with a very player-oriented structure. So it'll change quite a bit. It can be like a 3-1-4-2 or a 3-4-2-1 or whatever. But that's obviously very opposition dependent. But their intention very much is to have players who like basically player mark all of their opponents and then chase the ball with a striker or a winger or whoever is up there. So for one, they won't let you build out easily from goal kicks. And then even when they drop, they don't drop straight into a low block. They'll drop into like a 5-4-1, 5-3-2. Again, it depends on games, but they'll drop into more of a mid block. And just one thing to illustrate their pressing is how they press. So they're not just going to like chase after the ball all the time. They generally try to set traps, especially out wide, to press. So then you'll have like the wing backs jumping up to spring the trap. And I think one thing that illustrates that is their PPDA and high turnover stats. So if we look at PPDA, which is passes allowed per defensive action, which essentially is a metric that you can sort of use to measure pressing intensity. It's not the best metric in the world for that, but it's somewhere there. And by that, Alati are the sixth least intense pressers in La Liga. Okay, now intensity obviously does not mean quality, but you can sort of think of just how much they like run after the ball and chase it and make tackles and that sort of stuff, because obviously defensive actions are like tackles and interceptions and all that. So by that, they're the sixth least intense pressing team in La Liga. So that makes you think, maybe they don't really press so much. But if you look at high turnovers, then Atleti are the seventh most successful pressing team in La Liga. So they generate the seventh most high turnovers. I think this perfectly illustrates what they're doing with their press, because they're not like just running after the ball like headless chickens, which to be fair, no one is in this day and age, except maybe Newcastle. But they are now setting these traps really well and executing them really well, because they're essentially the sixth lowest at, you know, making those defensive actions, but the seventh most successful at winning the ball back. So I think that's a very good illustration of how they press, and that enables them to have solidity and not get exposed defensively, because obviously many pressing teams are going to get, you know, like if your press doesn't work, then you can get played through, and then there's a risk getting transitioned, so you'll have a poor defensive situation at the back. But because of these traps that Atletico said, they always have these numbers back in, you know, the defensive area, the center backs, defensive midfielders, and then it's just a few players who are set pressing in these traps. So I think that's a good balance they've struck. But I think Varun also has something to say about their defensive work.
Yeah, I mean, largely agree with what you said. I think as you said, the caveats around PPDA as a metric is that often it also just implies how high a team is parked. I mean, you can prevent passes just by being really high, camping in the opposition half. It doesn't have to be super intense. And the opposite is also true. Sometimes you can have intense pressing, very good traps, generate a lot of turnovers, but your PPDA doesn't show super high because you're just not parked that high. So I would say Atletico Madrid come in the latter. Their PPDA doesn't show it, as you said, because of the caveats, but they actually have really good pressing structures and they do aim to generate turnovers. I would say probably Man City is like the exact opposite. Their PPDA numbers are always in the top two or three because they simply park that high and they make passing that tough. But I wouldn't say they are like super intense pressers. Pep has actually toned down the pressing in the last 3-4 years considerably. They don't really rely on turnovers. They don't really generate counter-press situations that much. You know, City are not that kind of team. So that's where I would say there's a lack of sync between the PPDA stat and the pressing intent of a team. So I think Atletico Madrid, as you rightly pointed out, they've become much better at setting up these traps. I mean, Simeone was not good at this 5 years back, to be very fair. They were a very, very organized block and then counter kind of team. But now they actually proactively win the ball early because of some really smart traps, and then they're able to generate turnovers, as you said. I just wanted to bring about another point, and this is going to sound like a very casual remark after all that we have discussed, but I think one of their big issues in defense, and this kind of also points to what Alex was saying in rest defense, I actually think they're well coached out of possession. They just don't have good defenders and a good goalkeeper anymore. I mean, Jano Black was last good like 4 years ago. He's constantly underperforming on all shot stopping metrics, and he's not that great on the ball either, and he's a very reactive goalkeeper. He's not super proactive when it comes to claiming, sweeping, etc. And on center backs, I really think that's the area where Atletico Madrid are really weak. Can you guys guess who was the last center back they actually signed for money, and when it was?
Was it Chalar Soyuncu in the summer, and then they shipped him off on loan in the winter?
Did they buy Soyuncu? I don't even remember that.
Did they buy him, or did they?
I'm assuming they got Gabriel Paulista on a free. Yes. Was it? This is kind of cheating because he's technically left back. Was it Ronaldo?
No. And as you said,
Ronaldo was years ago.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, Varane said, can you remember the last time they did it? So it might have been years ago.
Okay, but it is years ago. 2019, Mario Hermoso for 25 million from Espanyol. That was the last time they spent on a centre back. As Alex said, Gabriel Paulista came on a free this year. And in between, they have just not spent on any centre back. I mean, Axel Witsel again.
What did I get beef for saying Ronaldo? He was signed more recently than Hermoso.
He was, but he's not a centre back. Come on, I mean, he was a left back.
Yeah, but your immediate response was, "Come on, man, that was years ago." No, yeah, actually, the guy I'm saying was 2 years before.
Yeah. So I mean,
sorry, continue.
My large point being, I think, and it's not like they haven't invested. It's not like they can't spend. I mean, in these 4 years, every window they have spent like, that Hermoso window is 250 million because of Joao Felix. That'll go down really badly. But then post that, they've spent 90 million, 86 million, 30 million, and 55 million in the four windows post that. So it's not like they haven't spent. They've just bought a lot of other things. They bought wingbacks like 3-4 times. They bought midfielders like 3-4 times. They bought Griezmann, which is sensational business. They bought a few strikers, Depay. So they bought Witsel on a free. They got a few free transfers, Witsel, Paulista. They haven't spent in defense. I think they require a Jano Black upgrade, a goalkeeper upgrade. I think they require a few centre-back upgrades. And I think that alone could solve a lot of their issues, because I'm now of the opinion that Simeone actually is coaching out of possession really well. The pressing structure, the deeper block, he's always been good. The pressing structure is also good. I think this is players away from competing with Madrid and Barcelona for the title.
Interesting. That's an interesting point. I was just looking at something while you were mentioning that. So one quick question before Alex, you go on to the stats, because I think this is actually a good transition for it. Who do you think, guys, is the highest paid player at Atletico per week, who accounts for about 13% of their weekly wage bill?
Has to be Griezmann.
Griezmann is fourth. And if that was the case, I wouldn't have asked the question.
Wait, so the player who...
He's the highest paid. He's about 13% of their weekly wage bill. And he's almost 100,000 euros more than the guy who's second.
Almost what?
Yeah, 100,000 euros a week more than the guy who's second.
Is Joao Felix included in there?
No,
he's left, isn't he? Oh, no, no, he's on loan.
I mean, he is there, but I think Barcelona are paying most wages.
No, I don't think they are. They're probably paying this
boss. Oh, that's also fair. They're giving him free Spotify premium.
I've got a really rogue answer. I don't think it is this player, but...
Go on.
I don't think he's particularly good, and yet he still plays. Is it Axel Witsel?
Nah, Witsel is like seventh.
Okay. Varan, your turn.
I'm thinking... I mean, come on. See, if it's Oblak, he needs to go now.
Yeah, it's Oblak, and his contract is till 2028.
So he was my second guess. Goodness. That's crazy, yeah.
Owe him another, what the hell? 100 million. Is that a real number? Yeah, that is.
If 100 million is a real number, mate.
No. Yeah, I think if I'm understanding this correctly, yeah. The total, so if he sees out his contract till 2028.
It's 104 million remaining.
Yeah, yet, they're gonna pay him 104 million.
So yeah. Saudi needs to do its magic. I mean, this is this is the most Saudi transfer ever. He's like super popular, and no one's gonna look at underperforming stats. They'll just buy him, but they need to do it fast, man. I mean, this is not working. I don't think it's working, and I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I think Alex has some stats to illustrate that, doesn't he?
Yeah, because broadly across the board, Atleti have some good stats. They're their non-penalty expected goals against is like the fifth best in the league of 1.0 per 90, which I think is really good. In other leagues, I think that'd be even higher. Fifth, probably like third. Their attack is decent as well. 1.62 non-penalty expected goals per 90, just a bit of a drop off from the top two teams. Shot distance is really close as well, so they take their shots closest to goal. But yeah, where they seem to lack is in goal. Oblak's underperformed in goal by 1.4 goals. So that's post-shot expected goals. So the measure of the quality of a shot, takeaway goals, which suggests he has let in 1.4 goals more than he has been expected to. And while he did have a really good period of overperformance, which is when probably people were saying best goalie in the world, right? 2017 to their title winning season. Like, I think he saved, just quick maths, I think he saved maybe 40 goals. More than expected across four seasons. It's just really
good.
That's
crazy.
And then you compare that to the last three seasons combined, he's conceded about like six-ish goals more than expected. So a big drop off there, which is weird because I don't think he's that old. He's only 31. But to be honest, I think the bigger problem, which I kind of outlined, is like what he does in possession. He's the Slovenian Donnarumma. Way decent shot stopper, but horror on the ball. Which, if Atleti do want to transition into being a more well-rounded possession-based team, Oblak's got to go. Same way Donnarumma's got to go at PSG. But I don't know. Knowing both clubs, they'll do a swap.
These are the modern David De Gea's.
I think that's a big sort of point I'll let you have to address.
Also, like one point I just wanted to add, and I forgot to say it in possession, I think Alex Stat reminded me of it, the short distance being the second best in the league. I do think they do this, they have this one style of chance creation, which is the narrow cutback from the half space, and I think they do it really well. We saw it in the Champions League game versus Inter. where I think Barrios missed the cutback, and then that's when Simeone laid down on the floor. I mean, that meme reaction. But they generate these really, really nice cutbacks on the edge of the box or just around the penalty spot. Either the wing backs get in and they cut back, or they do the rotation and the number 8 goes in and they cut back, or Griezmann or one of the striker goes in and cuts back. So they really like to use those half spaces as well, and just put in a short pass on the edge of the box, and it's either the striker or Griezmann or one of the eights who are advancing and ready to take, or sometimes even the wing back who are ready to take a shot. So I do think, again, a good visual of Simeone's coaching. They create high quality chances really close to goal. So I mean, I think the underlyings really imply that Simeone is coaching them well, and if they are not getting as many goals as the top two, it's probably, again, a player quality thing, or you just need to give it time and it'll get there.
Right. And I guess a last point, as always, is to discuss some players. So let's start with Samuel Díaz-Lino. Alex has some stuff to say about him.
Yeah, I'm curious what you guys are going to say about your players, because we're currently on track for our shortest episode. By not my shortest, I mean most on-time episode. So everyone get ready for these two to harp on about their last two players. Samuel Lino, he's coming to the team this season. He was on loan at Valencia last season, playing like a left winger. And he had a good season, scored 6 goals in a really struggling side. This season, I've really liked him. Despite just about more attacking play coming down Atletico's right, I think Lino's key. I also think it's quite rare to see someone who is in their early 20s, Lino being 24, I think only turned 24 December, like break into the starting 11 and really hold down each position. He's started 16 games, played 24. He's got 3 goals, got 2 assists. And yeah, as I mentioned earlier, big part of the way Atletico attack is due to their wing backs and the role they play. Lino and his connection with Antoine Griezmann has been great this season, and he's been really key in this team. And I tell you what, just as like a final note that's fun, if you're an avid FUBREF or FB ref user, as I am, you'll know there's some players, particularly wing backs, who get, you know, when you can compare them to other players in Europe, you get like 2 options, like the like fullback or attacking midfielder, and like sometimes it's the same for midfielders, right? Like compared to central midfielders or attacking midfielders, and like you often see a big drop off and a big gain in some stats. So it's like, one, it's quite hard to gauge, and 2, it shows, oh yeah, they're a decent fullback, but they're not the best defender, or oh yeah, they're a decent attacker, but not the best, you know. Like, you wouldn't be able to push him forward. Lino is surprisingly well-balanced across fullback and attacking midfield slash winger. Like, for a fullback, like, all his attacking stats are in the 99th percentile. But even when you compare him to wingers, like, it's stuff like his non-penalty goals and his shots are still in, like, the 70th percentile, which I find really impressive. And for his tackles as well, like, as an attacking midfielder winger, like, again, his defensive stats are all in the 90th percentiles. Again, if you go to his comparing him to defenders, his tackles and blocks are still in 86th and 93 percentiles. So I think it just shows how, like, yeah, this is a really well-rounded player who's shining compared to out-and-out fullbacks and out-and-out wingers. Really good prospect.
Yeah, that's interesting, though. I think what I would say to that is, obviously, the defensive stats are like, you know, volume stats rather than quality stats. So I think he looks good compared to fullbacks because of how Atleti press and like the traps they spring through the wingbacks. But like, I wouldn't say you can put him as a fullback and he'll defend fine.
Of course. But yeah. I think even then, like, I still think that's impressive because I don't think you see that. Oh, yeah. I've rarely seen that, like, even for volume. Like, most fullbacks will just complete more tackles, defensive work than, you know, like attackers will, right, than wingers. So I do think it is worth praising that he is shines, even if it's for volume.
Yeah, absolutely.
Against several fullbacks.
Yep, that's true. And I guess next up we have a player who Varun certainly wants to praise a lot more than people are praising. So Varun, tell us about Alvaro Morata.
Yeah, I'm just going to say this. I think he's one of the most underrated strikers in Europe. And largely, again, this is such a it's such a brand marketing kind of thing. He just got labeled a few things because of that Chelsea stint, and because he genuinely had mental health issues and it was publicized. And I think a lot of people just ended up labeling him stuff that he never was. But overall, if you look at his career, so I'm just going to read out some numbers. It's a stat attack. But since the age of 21, I'm going to read out goal contributions and then 90s. Okay. So like in his first year at Juventus, 21 goal contributions in 26 90s. Then next year, 21 in 26, 20 in 20, 15 in 31. Now comes the bad year where he was at Chelsea and then came back to Atletico. And even that bad year is 16 in 29. 20 in 30, 31 in 30, 16 in 30, 18 in 28, and finally 22 in 29. He almost averages, so his whole career goals plus assists per 90 average is 0.76. Basically, every four games, you're getting three goal contributions from this player. And I'm not even gotten to the fact that he's a good presser up front. He's very well rounded in the sense that you can use him as a target man. He's decent aerially. His first touch is good. He's a good passer. I mean, there's a reason I added goal contributions, because he gets assists regularly. He has seasons where he's got 11 assists, 9 assists, 6 assists, 7 assists, 9 assists again. So he gets assists consistently. I think the one problem against him is that he's never scored more than 20 goals in a season. And there are two reasons for this. He's not the most prolific goal scorer in the world. Yes, he's not the kind of guy who gets 30-40 goals, even if you play him consistently. And second, he doesn't play as much as, you know, you would think. Most of his seasons, as I said, are 25, 26, 30, 31, 90s. He's never had a, you know, 45-50 starts in a year kind of season. So those are the two main reasons why he's never like the top scorer charts and why people don't look at him as a 30-40 goal striker. But you know, all strikers don't have to be that way. Morata contributes really well in all phases of play. He assists others, he presses well, and it's just a very simple fit. You know, there's a reason Chelsea, Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, I mean, so many big clubs keep going for him and keep trusting him and play him as a striker, because it's a very simple fit. There's a well-rounded guy who can adapt to most tactics, do everything well, play with anyone. He played well with Ronaldo, he plays well with Griezmann. So he makes life easier for his managers and is a very valuable asset that way. And I think a lot more credit should be given for something like that.
It should also be mentioned he signed, he hired a mindset coach. He hired a mindset coach to help him visualize games because he was getting so anxious about them. And he said that.
I mean, these are the kind of things that were used against him, really sadly. I mean, instead of being praised, this was ridiculed on social, if I remember correctly, when it happened.
Oh, was it? Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, he seems to have done really good. Yeah, he says that he'll visualize games right from start to finish, all the moments. Clearly made an impact.
Yeah, I mean, he's having the time of his life, but he's certainly having a good time. So fair enough. And
he's captain of the Spain side, so
yeah,
I think it's the time of his life.
Yeah, and I guess the last player which I want to talk about is a very young Spaniard who I would say embodies this sort of evolution or shift in approach that Atleti have undergone in the last few years. So that is Pablo Barrios. He is a homegrown youth academy graduate in the sense that he spent the last 5 years of his youth career at Atleti. Interestingly, I didn't know this before I sort of looked him up for today's podcast. He spent 6 years before that at La Fabrica. So that's Real Madrid's youth academy. So he switched over, and yeah, he's broken into the senior team in the last season or two. This season, he's a pretty regular player. And I think now, obviously, he's a midfielder. So obviously, if you want to play in midfield for Diego Simeone, then you have to sort of work hard around a lot. And, you know, yeah, contest duels, win tackles, blah, blah, blah. He does that fine. But the real eye-catching part of his play is actually how he plays in possession. And his technical ability, his positional understanding, because when he plays, he's usually the highest of the three midfielders. So he picks up really lovely pockets between the lines or like in the half spaces. He receives really well on the half turn and plays forward. So he's super secure on the ball. He'll sort of get out of tight spaces and he'll link up nicely in the final third. He'll create chances. So I think he's a really exciting prospect and not really a player you'd have seen come through at Atleti even like 5-6 years ago, because while he is decent out of possession, obviously, like I said, you have to do pretty well like in that respect in general to play for them. That's not his strongest point. And I think maybe 5 years ago, that wouldn't have been enough for him to break into the team. But now he's been fairly regular on and off the bench or starting. I think over 1,000 minutes in La Liga. And yeah, just a really intelligent player who understands his role very well in the team. And yeah, obviously an excellent player on the ball. So I'm going to be watching how he progresses in the next couple of years. And I think everyone else should too. But yeah, like Alex said, this is probably the most on-track podcast we have. So last thing to do, let's not ruin it, is quickly have our predictions. I think the big thing to predict with Atleti is obviously their Champions League campaign, but also where they'll finish in the league, because they're in a bit of a battle for, you know, top four. We were recording this on Sunday ahead of their match against Barcelona, and so they've dropped to fifth because Atleti Club played earlier. So where do you guys think they can finish in La Liga? And more importantly, what do you think they'll do in the Champions League?
I'll go first. I think Girona drop out of the top four, so Atletico Madrid finish fourth. And in the Champions League, they'll beat Dortmund, get knocked out by PSG, who win the whole thing.
All right, that is
a lot of bold predictions.
Yeah. I know, I threw many bold predictions out there.
Yeah, yeah. I just asked for one. I got like three.
Alex has three episodes worth of bold predictions. I also think they'll come fourth. I don't think for Girona though. I think they'll come fourth for Athletic Club. So I think it's going to be Madrid, Barca, Girona, and Atletico Madrid. In the Champions League, I think I agree with Alex, or they might even beat PSG. I don't think PSG is going to be that. I don't know why PSG will win the Champions League. I mean, I'm just going to state that. I don't see it. But then, yeah, I mean, I think I know what Alex is going for. I think he's going for Enrique is boring enough to keep all the ball and Mbappe is good enough to finish it when they have it. So that's how they terrorize their way to the whole thing. So I get what Alex says as well. I think Atletico Madrid will do better than expected. They definitely win their next game and probably two. I wouldn't be surprised if they're in the final. I don't think they'll win the whole thing though. I mean, if anyone of City or Madrid or PSG even are on form, they'll win it. So I think it'll be a good Champions League campaign and they'll come fourth in La Liga.
Just doing a bit of background quickly to my predictions. The Girona one, I love it, is actually interesting because they've won just two of their last seven in the league, and that includes 1-0 losses to Mallorca and 1-0 loss to Getafe.
Squad depth is catching up with them, isn't it?
Yeah, they are on horror form. And PSG, I've got a feeling, and I know that's a bit vague, but I've at the last three Champions Leagues, I've predicted two of the winners in January. I predicted Chelsea to win it when they signed Tuchel. The second year, I didn't predict Real Madrid, so I own up to that. Third year, I predicted City like everyone else.
I thought Alex was going to come up with stats or something. He's going there. I know
I've got,
my
no,
shit.
I've, got, I've been right. So I'm going to be right again. I've been right. So I'm going to be right again. And also, I think Mbappe is the best player in the world. So when you have that difference maker and the fact PSG, I think are getting better every week. I just got off. Their style of draw is a lot easier. And I think
I get Atletico Madrid.
To beat Atletico Madrid, you do need the best player in the world. That's be that difference. And you've got Mbappe, so I think that'll be the difference.
No, I get Alex's point. I mean, I think knockout competitions, international ones as well, and Champions League and all as well, it's pretty easy. Not easy, but I mean, it helps if you are structured and boring enough to not get rolled over. And you have one or two players who will always win your stuff. You know, I mean, look at Madrid. So that kind of is a bit more sure shot than, say, being a great league team like City are. So I get what Alex is saying.
Also, I know we've just done a podcast about how Atletico Madrid are good, but I think they got quite lucky against Inter Milan. Like, they scraped through on penalties. And if Marcus Thuram or, well, if Nico Barella or Marcus Thuram especially could finish shots, then like, they'd probably be out.
Yeah, but that is true. But I think that also speaks to how good Inter are.
I thought the game was pretty 50-50. I mean, anyone could have won. I think even Atletico Madrid had one or two big chances.
The yeah, but I think it was towards the end.
It was the end. They got it in the last 20-30 minutes.
But Inter could have killed it before, to be fair.
Inter could have killed it before. That is fair.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, while Inter are obviously really good, like, let's be honest, on paper, they are still one of the, like, just in terms of quality, they are still one of the weaker teams in the competition. Like, and if it took much to get through Inter, like,
they are the finalists from last year and the runaway Serie A league leaders. So I get what you're saying.
What I say in terms of quality. Like, in terms of, like, the player quality, I think in terms of setup, they're excellent. Like, one of the best. And, like, and oh, yeah, so I predicted them to get to the final last season. But anyway.
Okay.
just throwing that one out there. I don't know. Just in terms of quality, I feel like if it's taken that much you to get past Inter Milan, like, I don't see how you go in as favourites against a team like PSG.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I wouldn't call them favourites, to be fair. But what I would say is, I remember reading this on social media. I have not bothered to verify it. But is it true that Diego Simeone has never lost a home Champions League knockout tie? I think it is.
I think that is. Or even if he has, it's just one here or there. But for a long time, this was true.
Basically, he's true. Very good in Champions League knockout games, right? Yes. And I definitely think they're getting past Dortmund because Dortmund have absolutely no business being in the Champions League quarterfinals. Okay. That's done. PSG is really interesting. I'm going to back Atletico though because I take Alex's point. But at the same time, I will say that Atletico have Griezmann who also has the difference. I mean, obviously, it's not Mbappe level difference making quality, but he's pretty, pretty good. We see that with France as well. And of course, I think we didn't actually give him enough credit in this podcast, but like he is a big part of the reason all of this possession-based stuff is working for Atletico.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually thinking about this before and I didn't bring it up in the podcast, but is it crazy to say Griezmann is in the top three attackers in the world? Like, he's not too far from Mbappe. I mean, Mbappe...
This is how Varun takes us over an hour.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Over an hour.
I think he is up there. Just a quick note, which is important.
Who are the attackers in the world?
Simeone, I've got Luis Enrique's record against Atletico Madrid. He's played 14, won 9, drawn 2, lost 3. So that would suggest the odds are well and truly in Enrique's favour. And, like, I don't think... Obviously, yeah, there was a man called Lionel Messi around at that time. But that was also, 14, 15, 15, 16. That would have been Atletico's sort of pomp years, right? Like, a couple of years after they won the title.
I don't think MSN counts, man. I mean, that is just cheat code stuff, dude. I mean...
I'm going to go for...
And I think... And Alex's point is the same will happen with Mbappe. So his point still stands.
but I'm going to go... I'm going to back him. I'm going to say Atletico go to the final. I'll go one step further. I'll say if it's neither Manchester City nor Real Madrid in the final, Atletico win it.
I'll be wrong, but anyway.
that's my prediction. And yeah, in the league, I'm tempted to say third. I'll say third. But yeah,
actually third makes it. I don't know why I didn't say third. They go over Girona and Athletic Club. If everything works out.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my prediction. But yeah, that's the episode. Under an hour for once. So well done, guys. Despite your best efforts, Varun. As always, you can find all of us on Twitter. I'm at Shilat Neel. Alex is at Euroexpert_, and Varun runs the at the Devil's DNA account. And if you go to @GreatFootballEU, you will find in the bio the links to all our country and league-specific accounts where you can follow them and stay updated with all the news, analysis, videos from around the world and Europe's big leagues. as we approach the end of the season in most parts. You can find a link to all of that in the notes or description of this episode as well, depending on where you're listening. And if your app allows it, please do rate the podcast and give us 5 stars if you enjoyed this. And of course, feel free to share on social media too. But thank you very much for listening. Thanks to you guys, Alex and Varun. And we'll be back next week with another interesting episode. Take care until then. Bye-bye.